Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and we're beginning in the southeast, where a one-time forceful hurricane is weaker and yet still powerful enough to bring high winds and heavy rains to parts of Florida and Georgia. It's one of the largest hurricanes ever recorded in the Atlantic Ocean, dwarfing the destructive Hurricane Andrew in size in 1992. We're curious about the conditions that can create two powerful hurricanes, Harvey and Irma, within weeks of one another, and what it means that more storms may be forming behind them. John Abraham is with us. He's a professor of thermal engineering at the University of St. Thomas. Long time no chat. John, welcome. Good to talk to you again.
It's a pleasure to be back on with you, Carrie.
And, you know, I'll put out the phone number here for listeners if they have questions about the way a hurricane behaves. This is a good opportunity to ask John some questions. So 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at CarrieNPR for your questions about how and why hurricanes behave the way they do. John, I want to talk about the track forecasting and how accurate it ended up being. Tell me how meteorology experts determine the track of a hurricane, sometimes when it's days or even more than a week out.
Well, it's a real challenge, but scientists have gotten better and better at this over years. Scientists use what are called computer models to predict where these hurricanes are going by looking at, I mean, it's basically Newton's laws. It's forces that act on the hurricane. Now, what kind of forces act on the hurricane? Well, there are steering winds like the jet stream, which are very powerful and they can push things around. There are also pressure troughs and ridges. So basically, there's low pressure areas that suck things toward them, and there's high-pressure areas that push things away. So if you know where these steering currents are and these high and low-pressure zones, you can get a sense of where the hurricane will go. Now, the problem is those things move. And so when you're trying to get a projection of where a hurricane is going to go days in advance, it's subject to a lot of uncertainty. So we like to prefer to rely on the cone of uncertainty, this uncertainty range that the hurricane can hit. But the fact of the matter is, when we put a line on the television screen or on a website that says this is our central estimate, people tend to think it's only going to go there. And that's exactly what happened with this most recent hurricane. The earlier projections were it was going to run up the Miami coast.
Right.
But the whole of Florida was in this so-called cone of probability, and the hurricane ended up switching over to the western side. So,
John, hang on. A question here also about the modeling, because I know we have European models and we have American models, and sometimes they don't agree. And as you, again, you look at the accuracy of the track, which one of those models appeared to have gotten the track right?
The European model typically does better, and it did better in this case. But that again, if you would have looked, I'm such a nerd. I was following this hurricane way back about 8 days before it hit.
No.
And the early tracks for both models were for it to hit in North Carolina in the Washington, D.C. area. So they both move around quite a bit, but the European model locked down on the right path earlier, and it stayed put, and the U.S. model slowly migrated to agree with it. But, you know, I wouldn't want people to think the European model is always going to be more accurate. You want to focus on this range of probabilities.
And do these different hurricane models use different science or different predictive analysis? Why is it that we would get different predictions from different models?
That's a really good question, and I think I know the answer. I think it's because they have different data sets. So when you have to gather information about where the pressure is, let's say over Canada and over the western U.S., and these different groups take in data from different instruments, and they incorporate them into their models. So I don't think it's so much as they use different mathematics, but they have different inputs. And this gives it's an important point to talk about, because if we want to know what's going to happen to weather, like hurricanes, we have to be able to measure what's going on in the atmosphere. If people watched TV, you saw these fancy satellite images. Those satellite images aren't magic. There's the satellites that are up there that NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, puts up there. And they're relatively expensive to put up, but they provide life and death information. So the more information we have, the better these models are, and we have to make sure we keep funding the instrumentation that will allow us to predict where these storms go. And that's a big, big issue in the scientific community.
John, I'm glad to hear that the satellites aren't magic, that they are actually based on science, right? And and as you note, I know there have been there's been some funding issues with some of those satellites. Here's a question for you off Twitter. Josh says, how much of our cool, dry August was due to these weather systems that pushed the hurricanes along? And how does that feed into the theory of cold, snowier north due to climate change? It sounds like there's two questions in that.
Yeah, it there is. And the questioner has been following the science on this quite a bit, and I'll explain this for your listeners. As the world warms, it doesn't warm uniformly. In fact, the Arctic near the North Pole is warming very fast. And what that does is it makes the jet stream undulate. It goes up and down and up and down, more so than it did in the past. And Paul Huttner on your station has talked about this quite a bit. There's been a lot of great science on it. The result of these undulations is that weather can get stuck. It can get stuck in Minnesota as hot, dry, warm and wet, or even cold. The so-called polar vortex is an example. This undulating jet stream affects the trajectory of hurricanes. And so there is this connection. Look, weather around the world is connected. What happens in the Pacific and what happens in the Arctic does affect what happens to storms like the storms that we've recently seen, Harvey and Hurricane Irma. I have to admit, I haven't been watching the jet stream over the last couple of days, so I don't know how undulating it is. I am certain that this is going to be something studied by scientists in the near future. What role did climate change have in directing the path of Irma? We know climate change, human-caused climate change, makes these hurricanes stronger. We're also learning about how they affect their paths.
We've had other years where they've predicted, the Weather Service and the hurricane centers have predicted an active hurricane season. And those have been years where the storms haven't really affected the U.S. mainland. I just wondered, is there something different about the way these systems have coalesced and what's happening, again, with the changing climate, that have pushed these storms our way? Or is this in some ways just coincidental?
Well, with respect to where these storms go and the human effects of climate change, we just don't know that yet. There is, as I said, some active research about how these undulating jet streams would change the path. But, you know, you've mentioned something really – well, let me take a step back. Hurricanes are fed by warm water.
Mm-hmm.
That's their fuel. You've heard about this as meteorologists have talked about Irma. The reason why scientists knew this was going to be a bad hurricane was it formed off the coast of Africa, and the ocean waters are really, really warm between Africa and the Western Hemisphere, and a lot of that is due to human-caused climate change. So they had this long runway. Irma had a really long runway of warm, warm water, and that's how it got to this very strong Cat 5 state. Okay, so that part, certainly largely affected by climate change. The hurricane probably would have formed had humans not influenced the climate, wouldn't have been as powerful, though. So we know that part. But what we're still learning about is whether the changes of paths are impacted by climate change as well. And that's, I think it's a little too early to make a determinative statement on it, but it's something that we're studying. You know, and you mentioned something that I want to make a point about. There have been a lot of hurricanes that have been steered out to the Atlantic. So they've just missed landfall. Some of them have been very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So people have made a point, well, it's been a decade since a Category 3 hurricane has hit the U.S., but we've had a lot of close calls, and we don't want to conflate hurricanes that have hit the mainland U.S. with total hurricane activity.
Got it.
Because part of it is just coincidental.
All right. John, really good to talk to you again, and I really appreciate your views and your analysis on the science of this. Thank you.
Pleasure, anytime.
John Abraham, a professor of thermal engineering at the University of St. Thomas, on the meteorological science of Hurricane Irma.